This is the Quality News Network. An American's right to bear arms will be reconsidered by the U.S. Supreme Court, justices agreeing to hear an appeal by the District of Columbia in favor of the city's existing handgun ban. Justices will review a ruling by a federal appeals court that struck down the D.C. law, saying that it was unconstitutional under the Second Amendment right to bear arms. It is a case that could produce the Supreme Court's first ruling in nearly 70 years on Second Amendment rights. A resolution in the fight over embryonic stem cell research could be on the horizon. Human skin cells have been transformed into batches of cells that look and act just like embryonic stem cells. Researchers agree it'll be years before their new technique called regenerative medicine will be used to treat patients. The world's top diplomats will soon receive a letter from Iran's foreign minister arguing the case for the Iranian nuclear program as peaceful and not a burgeoning atomic threat. The letter was published in Farsi by the Iranian state news agency, letter insisting that all Iran's nuclear activities are based on the UN's nuclear charter and the nuclear nonproliferation treaty. Meantime, the U.S. has accepted a proposal to hold new talks with Iran over security in Iraq, in particular, the provisions of bomb-making material to Iraqi insurgents by Iran. Iraqi leaders warn private security firms that act outside the law that they will be dealt a firm hand. The Iraqi government opening an investigation into a shooting of a woman in central Baghdad, the latest in a string of incidences using deadly force on Iraqi civilians. South of Baghdad, a coalition forces helicopter crashed today, killing two soldiers and injuring 12. U.S. military officials say the crash was not the result of enemy fire. In morning attacks around Baghdad today, 5 people were killed, 11 wounded. The director of Iraq's Geological Survey gunned down on his way to work. In London, a man from Ghana sentenced to 33 years behind bars for helping in a botched suicide bombing plot by Al-Qaeda that was back in July of 2005. Attacks were planned for 2 weeks after Islamist suicide bombers killed 52 people on 3 underground trains in London in early July. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and Business News is next.
Huelhauser talks to customers of First National, South Valley, and San Benito Banks, local members of the network of preferred community banks.
We're here to talk with people about their local banking.
So what do you look for when you decide where you're going to put all your millions?
Well, I haven't printed up enough to put it in the bank yet, but I guess for convenience, and pretty much it's like a grocery market. You get to meet the people there, and you build a little rapport with some of them.
You know, it's a local bank, but it's part of a network of local banks that give you big bank services.
Everything that I need as far as banking is concerned, they have it. Online banking is great for me. So I just like the services that they offer.
You ever taken your dog Cindy to the bank?
As a matter of fact, when I went to open my account, she was with me.
Ah!
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if we have a horse come through one of these days. We got a lot of cowboys come in and out of here, too.
Above and Beyond Banking from the network of preferred community banks. Available locally at First National Bank of Central California, South Valley National Bank, and San Benito Bank.
Two spacewalking astronauts wired up the International Space Station's newest room today. The newest addition to the International Space Station will keep the next shuttle back on track for early December. After working 2 years without a contract, CBS News writers, producers, and editors have agreed to strike. Their union represents employees in New York, Washington, D.C., Los Angeles, and Chicago. The Federal Reserve Bank lowered its growth target for the U.S. economy next year, raising hopes for another interest rate cut next month. Hewlett-Packard beat Wall Street expectations by posting a jump in quarterly profit on a 28% increase in net income. The company warned investors not to expect such growth to sustain itself during the next year. Amazon.com releasing an electronic book device called Kindle, which allows users to download and read 90,000 books, magazines, blogs, and newspapers. The $400 portable device went on sale this week. Light sweet crude trading at $98.03 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. Gold at $791.40 an ounce. At today's close of Wall Street, the Dow up 52 points at 13,010. NASDAQ up 3 points at 2596. S&P 500 up 6 at 1439. And there's always more at our website, QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
Take me confidential.
Gather around the radio, kids. It's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
Good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome to Book, Chapter, and Verse 75 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio, exclusively on the listener-supported Head On Radio Network. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. Today is, in fact, Tuesday, November 20th, so if you were listening on a Tuesday evening that happens to be November 20th, at about 9.06 p.m., you are indeed listening to a live show, and you are welcome to call in and speak to our guest, who I'll be introducing shortly. The show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com, and there you're going to find links to all of the guests, as well as to the audio archives from the past shows, as well as to the links to the individual guest site themselves. You'll find links to the chat room and to the Head On Radio Network main site, where you can find about all the other progressive programming on the Head On Radio Network. There are links there for Strictly Confidential's MySpace page and links to help you locate the music that you hear on the show. The toll-free line is 877, the number 4-HEAD-ON. That's 877, the number 4-HEAD-ON, or that translates to 877-443-2366. If you have unlimited long distance, please use that, and it saves the studio a nickel or a buck. The line is 304-658-3333. That's 304-658-3333, and that rings in West Virginia, where Bob or Agnes will take your call. Email arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com. That's Peter at headonradionetwork.com, and I do try to check the email during the breaks on the show. And I'm so pleased to have our guest with us this evening. He is quite an amazing man and is actually referred to us by way of our friend Ernest Cole. As you recall, Ernest has an international career in singing, and he is on the dance charts all over the planet. And Stan Harrison, who is the guest, plays for him and so many others. Stan was born in Philadelphia but raised in New Jersey. And shortly after he graduated from college, he started touring as a full-time musician. Now, Stan Harrison's name may not be a household word. However, he is a saxophone player with a long and successful and established career. It's just that few people know when they're listening to him. One thing is absolutely sure, though. If you've listened to, you have heard Stan Harrison, there's no doubt. If you've listened to David Bowie, if you've just watched the Disney Channel with your kids, if you've listened to Bruce Springsteen, Southside Johnny, Little Steven, Radiohead, Duran Duran, Stevie Ray Vaughan, They Might Be Giants, and by the way, he's touring with They Might Be Giants at this point in time. He'll probably be able to give us the upcoming concert dates. If you've listened to Ernest Cole, and if you've listened to, of course, Diana Ross, all of those people have Stan Harrison playing the sax. So indeed, you do know Stan Harrison. You just don't always know when you're listening to Stan Harrison. Stan, welcome to Strictly Confidential.
Peter, it's great to be here.
It is great to have you here, Stan. First, I need to check to see, can you hear me okay?
I can hear you perfectly well.
That's wonderful.
Can you hear
Stan, Yes, sir, you're coming in loud and clear. I have to do that so that the studio overhears us and they know what adjustments to make up there at the control board. If one of us has is weak or the other, they could fix it right up. Stan,
yes.
You amaze me. I have been looking through material here, and quite frankly, I don't know how you pull this off. Now, we are about the same age. I'm 53, and I think you're about 52, 53, too. But
I'm going to be 54 in just a week or two, so we are practically the same age.
Well, happy birthday to you. I'll be 54. No, I'll be 55. I keep losing track. I'll be 55 in April. I always lose a year. As I get older, I tend to round down. Stan?
I must tell you one thing. When I was on the road, I actually lost 10 years.
Okay. I'm curious about how in the world you started out with a degree in sociology and then went into music. I'm trying to add it up. You even refer it to in your bio here is you said it was a fairly useless sociology degree. Why didn't you take music?
Well, you know, I was always going back and forth, deciding whether or not that was the way I wanted to spend my life. And I mean, inside, I knew I had no choice, basically no choice. But I wanted to satisfy not only my parents who had other hopes for me, but I just wanted to explore other areas. And I once considered becoming a doctor as well. I was going to spend my senior year in high school at a program at the Hahnemann Hospital in Philadelphia, which would have taken off my first year of college and would have headed me right in the correct direction to become a doctor. But I saw somebody with a cut hand or something, and the sight of the blood made me realize that I really didn't want to be a doctor at that point. And I just decided to go into something else that would give me some type of background for another career if I had decided to go that way. Little did I know that getting a bachelor's degree in sociology doesn't prepare you for very, very much in terms of another career. I think in my heart I never actually expected to pursue that.
Well, according to your bio here, your parents tried everything to stop you from taking off on the road being a musician. What were some of the tricks they pulled? I'd love to hear.
Well, you know, they weren't what you'd call tricks. They were out and out. They were more like, you can't do that. Please don't do that. You're going to turn into this. You'll turn into that. And why don't you just play on the weekends? I mean, they had no idea what it was like to be who I am, or to be who any musician happens to be, and that is when you know that you're a musician, there's nothing else that you can really do about it. Nothing makes you feel that way, nothing. I mean, it's not something that you have a choice of doing. I think that people are very frustrated when they want to be playing and they're doing something else. And I luckily plowed through and I said, this is what I'm going to do. And they were very, very accepting ultimately. They just tried. But there was no trickery involved.
Stan, when were you first...
I had a more interesting story in that respect.
Stan, you are an accomplished sax player, and by every measure, you were one of the very best. What attracted you to the sax, and about when did that happen, and did you try other instruments?
Well, let me tell you this. I took guitar lessons for about 6 years, and I don't want to cast aspersions on my guitar teacher. I don't even know if he's around anymore. It's been such a long time. And I then took drum lessons for a while I was taking guitar lessons. At a certain point, I wanted to join the band in school. And I wanted to play trombone. And my parents said, listen, we don't want to buy you another instrument. Your uncle has a saxophone he's not using. Play that. So I borrowed the saxophone, which was virtually unplayable. Why I didn't quit right away, I have no idea. But eventually, my aunt got me a great con saxophone for my birthday a couple of years later. I took one lesson and quit taking guitar lessons like the next day. I realized that my teacher had been sort of like not the best teacher for all those years, and my sax teacher was just great. And I fell in love with the instrument, basically. I fell in love with it as soon as I heard Cannonball Adderley play. He was the first major saxophone player I ever heard on record, and that was it for me. That's all.
Well, Steve, how did you actually begin? I'm seeing something here that there was someone who couldn't play in a group called Southside Johnny and the Asbury Jukes, and you were elected as a substitute player, which led you to Diana Ross and God knows where. How do you get from Southside Johnny to Diana Ross, and what's the story there?
Let me tell you, and if it gets just too boring for you and your audience, stop me, okay? When I was in college, I used to play with a lot of the musicians in town, not only the people who were in college. And there was a really wonderful saxophone player named Angelo DiBraccio, who wasn't going to college but lived in... I went to Rutgers in New Brunswick, New Jersey. And a lot of musicians were in Rutgers. A lot of well-known jazz musicians were there, and they've got illustrious careers in that field. And Angelo was called to go on the road with Southside Johnny because their saxophone player was leaving. And Angelo couldn't do it, so he called me to ask me if I wanted to audition in his stead. And I did, and I got the job. And I was with him for about 2.5 years or so. And I left because it got to the point where I couldn't play my saxophone unless a microphone was in front of me. I was really having problems with my sound because of the volume that I was surrounded by, and thought that the only way to solve it was to quit. And I quit, and I took a few lessons with a sax player named Eddie Daniels, and he fixed me right up. I realized I didn't really have to quit to solve the problem, but I just didn't know that. In any event, Diana Ross saw saw Southside Johnny and the Asbury Jukes performing somewhere and decided that she wanted his horn section to go out on the road with her. And they called me when she called them, and that's how that happened.
Well, I understand you toured with Diana for about 2 years, and
I think it was about 2 years that I toured with her.
Well, did you?
I'm sorry.
I was just following up. I was wondering, did you get Diana Ross? Let me put it like this: we all love her, but she has a fairly specific sound. And listening to the music that you've kindly sent and the CD and I'm finding very different and wide. Did you find that kind of confining with Diana for a couple of years?
Well, you know, let me try to be polite about everything here. When you're playing in a horn section with one type of band, it's understood that you're going to be confined to some degree or another. And so on one level, yes, but I didn't expect, you know, I didn't expect something different from it. And it wasn't my only playing outlet. It might have been the way I was earning my living at the time, but it's not the only type of playing that I was doing. But in answer to your question, yes, I mean, there is a certain confining aspect. I think that it's kind of rough to find any one playing circumstance that will satisfy all of your loves as a musician. And you just learn to deal with it on that level. I mean, I'm sure there are people who only do things that they want to do, but I had to make a living at the time, and so that's what I did. But I don't want to make it sound that bad. I had a good time working with the people I was working with. I'm going to say something that when this is over, I'm going to be shooting myself for the things that come out of my mouth. I have to be careful here.
I'm sure there's nothing bad about Diana. It's just that I just noticed that you have such a wide range that surely you had to grow tired of it. But nonetheless, you probably traveled around the world with her and met so many people.
I traveled all over the world. I mean, I didn't travel to Asia with her, but I traveled all over this country, the United States, and Europe with her, and worked with the Jukes horn section, which I thoroughly enjoyed doing. We had a great time. There's no question about it. And I might add, we'll get to this. I imagine we'll get to this sometime before the evening's over. But the writing that you've heard of mine was I didn't even start to compose basically at that point in time, and so that's one reason why I wasn't pursuing my own things.
Interesting.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
It's interesting. It's interesting to me though that's the way you started. Now we will move on from Diana, but I do have to ask.
You can stay on Diana for
My listeners will not love me anymore unless I ask you what tracks of Diana you're featured on.
You know, here's an interesting thing. In terms of recording, I'm featured on none, and I mean, I don't think that I'm out of place in saying that there was a. I mean, I have to tell you that whenever you work with a well-known person, you're often required to sign something that you'll not say anything, you'll not repeat things that you saw, that you did. You know, it doesn't have to be anything bad, but just nobody wants their personal lives, like, discussed by people who are supposed to be working with them only. But what I'll tell you is obvious to anybody who has seen the shows, at least back when I was doing them, and who's also seen the person on her records. And that was, there's virtually no, there might have been one or two exceptions, but there are virtually no people who were touring who also did her recording. And
very interesting.
Anyway, she just had, well, I won't go into it any more than that, but that was the way she wanted it. And so I played on no tracks. However, if you want to know, I was touring just when things like I'm Coming Out were big hits and Upside Down, and that was the period of time that I was with her, and Muscles, and I don't know if you remember that song.
Muscles, I don't. The others, I do. They were, of course, huge and big dance floor hits.
Yes. Muscles came, I think, right after that. And I forget most of the things that were new at that point, but sadly, I did not record on any of those tracks. I hate to disappoint your audience at such an early time in the evening. I usually save disappointments for later.
I think they'll be able to move through it. Okay, it is sad though that she separated it that way. Someone with your talent. Did you meet David Bowie through that tour?
I met David Bowie in the following way. When I was with Diana Ross, you'll see how who you know is such a big part of it. When people say that, it's totally true. One of the violinists at the time with Diana Ross was going out with the drummer from Chic, who is unfortunately no longer with us. His name is Tony Thompson. And Tony had called me to go out with... Tony had told Nile Rodgers, who was also with Chic, about me, and Nile called me to go out on the road with Chic. And I wasn't able to do that because I was committed to... probably because I was committed to Diana Ross at the time. And... The Diana Ross tour ended. I might be a little bit hazy about this, but somebody who I was seeing at the time was having a drink with somebody who mentioned that Nile Rodgers was a close friend of her family, and this person suggested that that her friend call Nile and say, "Do you need a sax player for anything?" So the person did, and Nile happened to be doing the Let's Dance record, and Nile said, "Sure,
Hiya.
Have him call me up." So I called up Nile, and he said, I need a sax player. So the next thing I know, I'm in the studio here in New York recording with David Bowie. It was like that. It's kind of otherworldly. This doesn't happen every day, but it did happen to me like that.
I should say not. So then you are indeed the sax player on Let's Dance.
Oh, yes. Everyone else that I worked with, I recorded with. I don't think there's anyone else today something might come out of the woodwork, some project, but almost everyone else that I did tour with, I recorded with. And I recorded on that record, and then the record called Tonight, which is a follow-up, which not very many people seem to know about. And I recorded on one of his more recent records. You'll have to forgive me because I can't remember the name of it.
I'm often that way. Sometimes there's just too many facts to hold in your head, especially when it comes to...
It's an age factor that I hate to keep thinking about.
I try not to go there, too, but people don't really realize how old 53 is. We've had a lot of water under the bridge.
Exactly. You know, the cells aren't getting more numerous. They're sort of, when they die, they take a couple of thoughts with them, I think, you know, but...
What was David Bowie like?
Well, I loved him. I loved working with him. He was funny, smart, creative. He was a kind person. I used to hang out with him. When we would be on tour, we'd often go out to dinner with a few other people. Or it's not like an everyday occurrence, but we would hang out above and beyond the actual performing. And we traveled together as well all the time. We had for a good bit of the tour, we had a private jet, which was great. And he was always there. And he's an amazing person. I mean, he's an absolutely amazing person. There's no getting around that or no way to get around that.
That's great. His music is, of course... just amazing to me. And the next time I listen to Let's Dance, by the way, I have a DiscoNet remix of that. I'll have to run that one evening, and we'll have to mention that that's you. But there's so many artists.
I'm sorry.
I was going to say there's so many artists that we could actually spend the full 2 hours, you know, going down the list of artists and your stories, because you played with the you know, Duran Duran, they might be Giants. I think they might be Giants is fairly current. What's going on with they might be Giants?
Well, I've been working on and off with them for about, I guess, 6 or 7 years. And the first thing that I did with them was, I forget what the recording was, but soon after I did the Jon Stewart Millennium Show, which you may or may not have seen. And soon after that, well, I just was always being called to do records or sessions, the on and off live date. I mean, they're incredibly versatile people. I'm amazed at how great they are at so many different things. And but all of a sudden, a month or so ago, they called me with two other horn players to do some live dates with them outside of New York, which I don't think had ever happened before. And so we just played some concerts in the Midwest and in Boston. And I've got two more that I'm doing. One the day right after Thanksgiving is that I think it's called the 930 Club in Washington D.C. And then the thing after that, the Theater of Living Arts in Philadelphia, and that will be it until I play with them in the at the Beacon Theater in New York on February. But I just played on their last record. I played on the Disney theme show, a theme song for the Disney Playhouse, and more, I've played on more things than I can actually remember. I think I've answered. Anything else you wanted me to say about that? I mean, they're great to work with. They're incredibly talented people as well.
Well, they're
and
certainly.
I hope everybody goes out and sees them. I don't know if tickets are left, but I know that they probably are. I don't know if they're back yet. They did play in. Are you in? You're in. Where are you now?
I'm physically in Tallahassee, in the middle of nowhere, at the studios of West Virginia.
Okay, well, I would imagine that they have been or will be in West Virginia and Florida. Where in Florida, I don't know, but then again, I don't have their whole schedule in front of me.
Well, there are so many people you've played with. There are probably a few we'll come back to, but let's talk about your music. There's a lot of it, and all of it is wonderful. And I'm not going to try to pick out the tracks, and I'll be. The reason why is because I want you to, because since we won't be able to get to it all, we'll run these on future shows with, and say that they were, you know, that they were from a previous guest and that sort of thing. So we'll eventually get to them all. But perhaps you'd like to introduce one of these tracks and tell us the story behind it. That you have a much better knowledge of that than I.
Okay, well, let me ask you a question first, if you don't mind. I don't know exactly what type of music your audience would prefer to hear, and I want to keep them in mind. But what you do have in front of you are, I sent selections from three different periods of my writing. One is a bit more fusion-y sort of jazz stuff, but certainly not typical in that respect, I don't think. And then there's a group of pieces that I wrote that they're very film noirish pieces for saxophone, string quartet, and bass, which I recorded when I was living in London. And then there is the more recent record, The Optimist. I should say the string quartet record is called The Ties That Blind. And then there is The Optimist, which just came out a couple of months ago, which is more. It's an extremely eclectic group of pieces. Electronic and live and real combined with jazz, classical, and world influences. I suppose to even describe it is almost absurd. You have to hear it. I'm trying to think of what the most sensible thing to do would be. Maybe we could start with something from the new thing and then go back and then go back to the new thing after hearing some other things. Is that possible?
Yes, certainly. You're, by the new thing, you mean starting with The Optimist?
Yes.
Yes, and I think that's a great idea, and I'll tell you why. Our listeners span quite a range. We have a large number of heterosexual listeners that we inherit from the show prior to this, which is a wonderful thing, and I'd love to have them. We have an LGBT audience also. And And there are artists here that you have singing on some of these tracks, which just amazed me. You have Philip Bailey on one of the tracks from Earth, Wind, and Fire. You have Phoebe Snow. You have Andy Vargas from Santana singing on one of the tracks off this new CD called The Optimist. You know, it's just amazing to me. We love all of these people. And I'm at a loss to choose, but we'd certainly like to hear some tracks from The Optimist first, I agree.
Okay, well, I'll tell you, there's also another singer who you'll love hearing. That's presumptuous of me to say. Her name is Najma Akhtar, and she's singing on the title track. I think that your audience, I would say this, I hope that you all love her voice after you hear her sing. The album is part instrumental and part vocal. So I think that if you don't mind, I'd like to give people a flavor of what both types of things are.
Wonderful.
Also would like to, at some point when you think it's good, I'd love to. I know that we're going to play the song that I played on with Ernest.
Oh yes, we have that too. Now, you know, the last singer you mentioned, I did not dare risk her name, but apparently you thought highly enough to summon her from Pakistan to do this song.
Well, I flew in from London. She is a Pakistani woman whose family, she actually was in Pakistan when I was speaking with her. She was working with her sister who was doing some relief work, and that would have been a bit more than it wouldn't have been a bit more. When you hear, I would have wanted to fly her in from the moon if I had to and if I could. Maybe you'd like to hear that song first.
I'd like to. I've not heard her, and anyone that you would summon from Pakistan to do a track has got to be wonderful.
Well, why don't we start off with the title track from The Optimist, and then we could play an instrumental track from there as well, which I would love to do if you don't mind.
Wonderful. And Bob has The Optimist all queued up and ready to go. So, Bob, if you'd go ahead and run Stan Harrison, The Optimist from The Optimist CD. To tell you something, Stan, I don't think I have ever seen such sudden reactions from all the listeners in quite a while. The input is flooding in. First of all, I get an email. People are listing all of it. I get an email with an attachment of Diana Ross doing Muscles. I have Billy Shears in main chat, who is our main music consultant and does a music program on Saturday evenings called Night Sounds with Billy Shears. It runs at 9 p.m. to tell you, wow, wow, wow. Tell Stan I love this, and then goes on to say that he feels that you play the sax like Spyro Gyra. I have input from a fellow in Tennessee who instantly picked up on, is it Najma?
Najma.
Najma. I also have a listener who's writing in to ask you, I mean, this is just huge. I've never seen reaction like this. We have a listener who's writing in to ask you if your time with Diana Ross coincided with that of an upright bass player by the name of Phil Baker.
Yes.
Yes.
I love Phil. I haven't seen him in a number of years, but we were on the bandstand together.
Wonderful, wonderful. This fellow knows that, and I'm just blown away. You're a hit, dude.
Okay. I'm very happy that people were listening and liked it. I'm very pleased.
Well, you just pulled gold out of the pocket. I definitely want you to choose the next track. I wouldn't dare.
Well, I mean, I don't want to give myself bad luck. I tell you one thing that the person who produced my record, his name is Gerard McMahon, and Gerard and I have known each other for a long time, and he approached me a few years ago about wanting to produce a record that I would compose, and he would be helping to choose the material, and actually he and a person named Tony Silver were involved with doing a lot of the electronic drum tracks that you hear on some of these pieces. And I just wanted to say that this piece, The Optimist, was originally conceived as an instrumental track, and he thought he's known Najma for a number of years, and suggested that she might be, if she were agreeable to do this, that she might be perfect for it. And when I heard her voice, I thought that it was a stroke of genius. And so I just wanted to let you know that hiring her was not my idea, but I'm so happy that it was brought up. I thought you might want to know just a little bit.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. And another question has just come in. Do you prefer the studio or the live stage when you're playing?
You know, they're both, it's an interesting question because they both provide so many different things. I mean, when you're in the studio, that you've got incredible control over what you're going to do and what you're going to release. And when you're playing live, I mean, once it's sort of like this radio interview, I can't backtrack when I say something. You know, I don't have the politician's ability to do that. So when you play live, it's all over, but there's a certain excitement that you get when you're playing in front of people that you just can't even approach when you're playing in the studio. You know, I really love both of them. There's just no question about it, and I like being able to be as nitpicky as I feel like being, or as I can be, on the one hand. But I love playing in front of people, so This is a long-winded answer that I could have answered by saying I love both of them.
You don't have to be. This is Conversation Radio, and what we do best here, Stan, is to ramble. There are two people who are mentioning that they really don't want us to skip over Philip Bailey or the Andy Vargas track. We don't have to do those next, but I think I'll be in deep trouble if we don't get to those at some point.
Well,
Earth, Wind, and Fire.
That would be my pleasure. But if you don't mind, I would like to do the very first tune on this record, on my record. It's an instrumental. It's called Breath After Breath. And you might get fewer callers responding to this. I certainly hope not. It's just a different thing. But I would like to play that just to balance out the fact that this is an instrumental record, which I hope after hearing bits of that your listeners, if they don't go out and buy it, at least check it out to a greater degree.
Well, I don't think there's any question of that. And I believe the studio has Breath After Breath queued up at this point. And it's Stan Harrison, Breath After Breath from the Optimist CD. Well, Stan, I stand in amazement. I'm being told in the chat room that this is the best Strictly Confidential show they have ever heard. I've been told that the track that just, I'm telling you the truth, I've been told the track that just played is absolutely incredible, and I see people typing things like, wow, listen to that. I'm being told that this is the most serious professional musician I've ever had on the show thus far. And, I'm blown away.
I really appreciate you're giving me the opportunity to have my music played, and I'm quite enjoying this, and I want to thank you for this.
It's my pleasure. I'm also being asked, where does the title from an instrumental come from? How do you do that?
Well, that's a very interesting question. For me, titles are as important as the music, and the titles almost invariably come second, and I just sit around and I listen to these pieces, and I mean, of course, unless there's a lyric which dictates what it's going to be called, I just listen to them and they'll either just pop into my head, or I'm an avid reader of all sorts of things, poetry being among those things, and sometimes I'll just sit around with a notebook and I'll be reading a book of poetry or something else, and I'll write down words that I like, words that I have no use for at the time, but which I think I might at some point. And then I just, sometimes if nothing comes to me, I play around with words, combine them until something sort of matches what I'm feeling but can't express by that song. And it's then considered, for me, it's a match. And that's how it happens.
Interesting. And another question, who's on the flute in the last song? I'm being told that was very intense, and who did the flute?
I'm playing all flutes as well, and bass, clarinet, things like that.
My stars! You multi-tracked that and you did the flute, too? That's just amazing. Amazing.
Thank you.
I'm being asked a question I don't understand.
Okay.
I hope you do.
I'll try.
You have something called a hook book for instrumentals, the way a lyricist does?
A hook book, you know, I never heard of a lyricist hookbook. I don't really know. I would love that person to clarify what that is. I've honestly never heard of it. I mean, I know what a hook is, but I don't know what a hookbook is.
He's explaining now.
I'm sorry?
He's hearing what you're saying and explaining now. Catchy phrases is what it comes down to. Lyrics that have catchy, like, hooks in them, catchy phrases, lyrics. Is there something like that for instrumentals?
Is this for titling instrumentals or for coming up with music ideas?
I would assume both. For music, the chatter is indicating music.
Okay, not that I know of. You know, but what's really interesting to me is that, and that's why music is, for me, just so addictive. I mean, anything could be the basis for a hook to something else. You know, you could be listening to almost anything, to car horns, to whatever. If you add a rhythm and a background to it in some way, you can. Hooks are all over the place, you know. I think the ones that come to you on a more spontaneous level are the ones that often are the ones that they might not be the best for everyone, but they're the ones that you can develop to a greater degree than others. So I generally don't. I mean, I don't know that I'd even go to a book for a hook if one existed. I'd certainly be curious to know if it does. Although the question was arising from someone who didn't know if there was. I doubt that there is one. There are books of themes from, like, classical music. You can find books that will give you the first, second, third themes of the movements of every major symphony and piano concerto, et cetera. You could use those as hooks, but anyway, the answer is no, I don't know of one.
I'm also being told that you must listen to a lot of smooth jazz. Is that the case?
To be honest with you, I don't. I hope all the lights don't die down at this point. But
I don't think so. You're way past the lights going down, buddy. It's your last thing you know.
Down for a while, right?
Right.
You're the last one left in the building, I guess, and the phone's all off. No, I listen to the music that I listen to when it comes to jazz is the, I mean, artists like Coltrane. I listen to a lot of people who are no longer around. I mentioned Cannonball Adderley and Charlie Parker. I listen to lots of really modern stuff that would be that could be considered on the avant-garde side. And I listen to a lot of classical music and a lot of classical music written by, I mean, for lack of a better word, I'm calling them classical, but written by composers who are still alive, if you can believe that. And I listen to a lot of, there are a number of rock groups that I really, really love. But smooth jazz has just not ever been, it's not my I don't listen to that.
Well, nonetheless, the chatter is commenting that you have it absolutely nailed. You have nailed smooth jazz, whether you listen to it or not. You have nailed it. And I'm also being asked, do you listen to music that is not sax based? And the examples are Bird or Ornette Coleman. Charlie Parker is Bird.
And Ornette is a saxophone player. Yeah, I love Ornette, but well, Miles Davis, for example, just to bring up one person. I was just listening to an old Oliver Nelson record called Blues in the Abstract Truth, which is, I believe was either just re-released on CD, or it was, for me, it was the first time I saw it. And I was just getting blown away by Freddie Hubbard's trumpet solos, as well as Eric Dolphy's alto solos. But Freddie was like, I hadn't heard him play in a long time, and he sounded great. And all the classical music and rock and roll and rock music that I listen to is generally saxophone free, not because I want it to be, but that's just the way it usually is. So no, I don't.
Well, I'm going to give out.
Again.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
Well, I was basically rambling to an end, saying so. Thus, I don't only listen to saxophone players.
One last artist is being mentioned, Grover Washington Jr. Do you listen to Grover?
I used to. I mean, a long time ago, I listened. You know, it's funny. I used to listen to Grover Washington, and I don't know if any of your listeners know of a saxophone, remember a saxophone player who, for all I know, is around playing. I just haven't heard anything from him in a long time. His name is Ronnie Laws, and he is the saxophone-playing brother of a well-known flautist or flutist, depending on how you're feeling on that particular moment, of Hubert Laws. And Ronnie Laws had one of the most original, wonderful saxophone sounds that I ever heard at the time, playing the type of music that he played, they weren't calling it smooth jazz back then. It was more just like R&B. I can't remember what they used to call that stuff, like the Crusaders and Grover stuff, and then Stanley Turrentine when he was doing stuff like Salt Song. I think it might have been that record that I'm thinking about. But yeah, I did listen to Grover. I'm talking about 20 years ago.
Well, the chatter in specific is Billy Shears, who's our musical guy, and he knows both Ronnie Laws and Hubert, and is saying yes. And he hasn't asked yet, but I can basically guarantee you that he's going to want to use your tracks on the Billy Shears show on a Saturday evening. So we'll hook all that up later. I could just see it coming. I do want to go ahead and give out the toll free lines and the telephone numbers again in case someone would like to call in and talk with us. The toll free line is 877, the number 4 head on. That translates to 877-443-2366. If you have unlimited long distance, please use that. It'll save the studio a nickel or a buck. That's 304-658-3333 and rings in West Virginia. You've hit the nail on the head twice in a row. Where are we going next, Stan?
Well, let's see. Why don't we do another vocal tune and then maybe try a couple of other instrumental tunes of a bit of a different nature. Okay, but I want to ask you a question, if you don't mind. When this song is playing, am I allowed to put the phone down and go get a glass of water?
You absolutely are allowed. In fact, you know the timing of the song better than anyone here, so I'm sure there's no question you'll make it back in time. In fact, your phone and my mic are both muted during the song, so
may I talk to you during the song or not, if I need to?
No, unfortunately, no. When they, it would, no, we can't do that because it would go out over the air.
That's fine. Well, listen, I'm going to just run out for a second to get something to drink. When the song ends, if there's dead air on my side, just improvise for a second, if you will.
I'll start thinking I'm coming out. How's that?
That's fine. As long as you know a few verses, you'll do well. I won't do that long.
Okay, what is our next what is our track to run?
Okay, well, here's another vocal track, which is on. It's from The Optimist again, and it's the one that features Andy Vargas. I will tell you that this song is the most pop of all the songs on the CD, and it has a lyric. I came up with the concept for the song, but I did not write the lyric for the song. I came up with the title and basically the hook, but Gerard McMahon wrote the lyrics for the rest of the song. And it's called Living Every Day Now. And I suppose the meaning of that song will become evident when you hear the lyric. Andy Vargas from Santana sang it. And I won't say much more. I won't say anything more about it because I'm so thirsty I can't talk.
Okay. All right. You definitely head out, and we're going to go ahead and run now. Stan Harrison from his CD called The Optimist. The track is called Living Every Day Now with Philip Bailey
Andy Vargas.
I'm so sorry. Yes, I drew the wrong line. Andy Vargas from Santana. Thank you.
I'll talk to you in a bit.
Absolutely beautiful track.
Thank
Stan,
you.
Stan, are you back with us?
I made it back.
I'm glad to hear that. Now, Stan, I have to tell you the comments that are coming through. One of our fellows says that it's the most beautiful thing he's ever heard. He uses the word having orgasms here. We have a chatter who's telling me that this is absolutely top drawer stuff, and by the way, this is Billy Shears who just said that, and he is without question a musical authority around here. He knows what he's talking
that.
About. I have another comment saying regarding the comparison to Spyro Gyra earlier. They're saying that Spyro Gyra is the Campbell's chicken noodle soup of jazz, and that you are so far past that everyone absolutely.
They're great. I appreciate the comment, though. I mean, I appreciate the compliment on my devoted to me, given to me here. Thank you.
Well, I would be lying if I didn't pass it along. I have to. It's just what I do. I couldn't do this show without the chat room, quite frankly. They're my cue cards.
Well, I appreciate it.
And so, and again, I too think that is an absolutely beautiful, beautiful track. How do we follow it, though? How do you follow that?
Why don't we just change? Why don't we do something if we can from my first record? And I want to remind you. I want to make sure that we get to this song that I did with Ernest. I mean, I haven't heard it in so long, and I'm very interested in hearing it again as well. And maybe not next, but I just want to. I probably don't need to remind you, but I just wanted to bring that up. And could I say one other thing? In the midst of all this and the playing,
of course.
I just want to mention, if you don't mind, one other person. I mean, aside from playing with Radiohead, which is one of my, I mean, I've loved that band for a long, long time. So it was a big honor for me to get a chance to record one song with them, even as part of a big horn section and to perform with them. I actually sent one of the tracks, but. It's called the National Anthem, but when I saw what you sent me back, somehow it was translated into a tune by Michelle Ndegeocello, and unless I said something I didn't think I was sending, I think that they just mistranslated. I'll just let you know if we end up getting to that later, but I recorded...
Yes, I do have a track called 100, it's 100, the National Anthem. Yes, I do have that.
That hopefully is the Radiohead version.
I see.
The Radiohead song. I think that it was just one of those things that when it was that they just called it the wrong thing when it went online. But I wanted to just mention one other artist I used to work with and record with and tour with, who is one of my favorite out of all, and his name was Serge Gainsbourg. I don't know if any of your listeners know of him. He was a French, very, very iconic individual. So I would advise anybody with any even vague interest in what I'm saying to just Google and find out something about his life. A phenomenal life, and he was like my father for a few years. He died in 1991, I think it was. And anyway, I just wanted to mention his name as one of my absolute favorite musicians ever. And I would feel bad if I didn't say that. But anyway, in terms of what to do next, why don't we just try turning things around a bit and doing a song called You Probably Think I Understand. If your listeners like this, then I'll be their fans. Okay, it's not that it's out, but it's just very different. It's very, I call it music that you don't want to be listening to near razor blades. Someone else called it uneasy listening. And do you mind giving it a shot?
It's here, yes. The track, it's studio, it's listed as track 03, You Probably Think I Understand. And by the way, after we get back from that, there people are asking for Radiohead stories, too. There's a lot
okay,
of interest in
I've got one. I've got one or two.
Okay. Let's run this one. This is also Stan Harrison, and it's from, well, I don't know what CD. Oh, yes, it's from the Tie That Binds CD.
The Ties That Blind.
Oh, The Ties That Blind. Yes, I see that now. That was an interesting twist. And the track is called You Probably Think I Understand. Stan, they are saying that that track is absolutely darkly fantastic.
And, I like that.
That's what they're saying. I'm not lying. I wouldn't lie to you about this. And getting back to Radiohead, people want to hear some Radiohead stories. And also, there's a question about this track you mentioned called National Anthem. Is that from Radiohead's National Anthem? Is it track 3 off of Kid A?
It's from Kid A, yes.
Wonderful. We might try to get that next. If it turns out to be the wrong track, we'll leave the mics on for just a minute, and we'll be able to, you know, correct it if it's the wrong track, if it's mislabeled.
Great. I was playing baritone sax on that. Did you want to play that next? Should I talk about that for a second?
Yeah, we probably should. I also have another comment also to ask you if you listen to Boney James or Paul Taylor. And these are names I don't know.
I know of Boney James. I don't listen to him. I don't know. Paul Taylor, you said? No, I don't know who that is.
Okay. I just never know. I have so many listeners who are, you know, so into so many different aspects. I often ask questions that I don't know where I'm going with. But yes, by all means, tell us a Radiohead story. Let's see if the National Anthem track is from that.
Okay, well first of all, I was called to play baritone sax, and a lot of what you hear me playing on baritone sax near the end of the piece sounds like a very, very high trumpety sort of thing I was playing, very, very high on the baritone sax at the end. But the idea that they had for this song was to get a horn section to sound like what their vision of the Charlie Mingus big band would do when they were all playing together and going crazy at the same time. The name Charlie Mingus came to their minds. And we were in their studio in Oxford, England. I was living in England for a couple of years with my wife before we got married. Actually, we lived there before and after we got married and came back to New York after we decided to have kids. But I was there for a couple of years, which made it a lot easier for me to work with them. And we were in Oxford, and they were listening to us collectively do these parts and improvise at various sections. And the first few takes, they weren't happy with the way things were gelling. And so I suggested to either Tom or Johnny Greenwood, I suggested that maybe they could conduct us. In that, if they wanted us to play a lot of notes, they would move their hands around a lot, and less aggressively if they wanted us to play fewer, and to raise their hands up if they wanted it loud and down, or things like. And they said, "Well, we never conduct it." I said, "Just try it. I think one of the problems is that we're all going in our own direction, and maybe you'd want to control the group dynamic." Well, we did that, and then Johnny was on one side and Tom was in front of my half, and the next thing I know, he's jumping up and down and spinning around like they were natural born conductors, although not in the traditional sense. And it was the most incredibly fun, exhilarating thing to do, and after two or three tries of doing it that way, I don't think we did that many more, we had the track that you'll end up hearing here. And
okay,
that's
the track we have is 3:12, so I suspect it is the right track. Does that sound about right?
You know what? I don't know what Michelle's track is. I have no idea. You said that you actually have Kid A in your studio.
No, what I'm saying is we have one from you that's called the National Anthem, Michelle, and it's listed as being Michelle.
If I didn't send you the right track, I mean, actually, I have a copy of it here. Do you want to just check it? I hope it is.
Yes, absolutely. We're going to leave the mics on during the intro, and if it's not the right track, we'll just speak up.
Okay.
Does that sound okay? So this is and you're being conducted with hands up, hands down on this track, the National Anthem.
With people jumping up and down and spinning around and going crazy, if you could picture this.
Okay, let's give it a shot and see if this is the right track. Bob, it's the it says 100, the National Anthem.
It's not.
Okay. It's not the right track.
It's not
too
the
bad
right
about
track.
That.
I can't believe it. You know what? I mean, I could try to send it to you during one of the breaks. I don't know how that would work.
Well, you could if you have it handy. If it's going to go through the Panda thing, I don't believe that they have that at the studio. So we'll do it. If you'll send it though, I will run it another evening and say it's from a previous guest.
Okay. If you want, I could try to send it to your email if I have it. Which I do, although it's 5:52, and I can't believe, and I just don't know if I can get it to you in time, but
not a problem.
Well,
we've got so
I'm
much
sorry
music
about
here.
That.
Don't be sorry. It was a whim, but we do have questions about the Philip Bailey track and also about the Phoebe Snow track. If we're ready to go there,
yes. Why not? In fact, whichever one you want to do first, you tell me.
Well, I'm thinking the Philip Bailey, but I don't know. Now, Philip Bailey is from Earth, Wind, and Fire, but I don't know which track it is called.
Okay, it's called What About Peace of Mind? And I'll tell you, Philip Bailey just does what he does, the scat sort of thing that he does. He's not really singing a lot of words, but the voice that you hear is Philip's. So What About Peace of Mind is the one he did. And before and after that, if you don't mind, I'd like to play one more instrumental before going to the Phoebe song, if that's okay.
That's okay. And we're also getting requests for some modern freeform stuff, too, if you have that available in the list.
Oh, gosh. I don't know if I have anything that would qualify as modern freeform that I could play for you. You know what? Maybe we'll go back to one of my older pieces, which might be a little bit crazier. We'll try it anyway and see what they your audience thinks.
I think we need to have you on every night for a week is what I think.
I'm enjoying it. That would be fine.
Okay. Let's then try the What About Peace of Mind. It's Philip Bailey from Earth, Wind, and Fire, and it is Dan Harrison from his The Optimist CD. Again, they absolutely love the music. Billy Spears is just beside himself. I promised that I would email him your email address after the show, and hopefully you guys can set it up, because he really would love to run some of your music on the Billy Shears Night Sound show that runs Saturday evenings, if that's okay with you.
That would be great. I'm leaving on Thanksgiving's on Thursday, so he wanted to do it for this coming Saturday.
Probably not. I would imagine that Billy has this Saturday show wrapped up, and with the holiday weekend, you'd have to drop to. But I'll go ahead and set up the contact information, because Billy is. And by the way, I refer to Billy Shears as the world's most fabulous straight man. I have little nicknames for people, and Billy is concerned that I'm going to give you the title.
I will not try to usurp his position.
Okay. I think he feels you might deserve it, though, by the way.
I'm not that type of person.
Well, we've talked about that. Of course, the call is yours. We have talked about running the Ernest Cole track, Love Has Taken Over, which you do. And by the way, how did you get hooked up with Ernest? With his style is of course contemporary dance, which is really my bailiwick. And how did he ever find you?
Well, I had a studio here on, West 30th Street for a number of years. And there's a producer, I think you might have spoken with him. His name is Steve Skinner.
Yes. Yes, Steve Skinner.
Well, his studio was right next to mine. And Steve
I'm sorry, Steve is coming up on the 29th. My mistake, he's coming up right.
Oh, okay. Well, Steve would from time to time call me to play saxophone solos, I think primarily because he didn't have to pay for my cab fare since I was 10 feet away from him. So he was doing a lot of work with Ernest, and he called me in one day to play on one of Ernest's tracks, and I did, and we did a number of things over the years, and I've always liked Ernest a great deal. I respect his talent, and I think he's a great guy, and we lost touch between my going to London and this, that, and the other thing, and I just happened to run into him a couple of months ago, and that's how I have to thank him for introducing me to you, but that's my history with Ernest, which is fortunate for me.
Ernest is, of course, a very talented man, and I listened to his track Love Has Taken Over again today, and listened to the sax section specifically in it. And you were able to adapt to just anything. It's really quite amazing. Maybe we can go ahead. Is that all right to run that next, or would you prefer another?
No, that's fine. Let's play that. I'd love to hear it, and then we'll move on. But I'd love to hear it.
Okay, this is our friend Ernest Cole, who has been on the show before. And by the way, Ernest will be with us again. He is coming up on the 29th of this month with the legendary Steve Skinner. And you will, as was just referenced by Stan, and you're going to really enjoy Steve. And Ernest is a wealth of information about people in the music business. And you'll recall the story about Ernest. One of the things he did we had a great time with was that he played Rocky Horror in the Broadway version of the Rocky Horror Picture Show. So if you don't remember anything else, listeners, I know you're going to remember that. So in any case, this is Stan Harrison playing on the yes, he is playing on the Ernest Cole track called Love Has Taken Over.
My
Now, Stan, what amazes me about that track is how you were able to fall into total Motown mode.
Well, I've always loved Motown, and it's such a cool track. And I always used to, I mean, plays that I used to love to listen to, it, like King Curtis and Junior Walker and those players, you know, and so it's part of my vocabulary, I suppose, part of my past. So luckily they just trained me on the spot.
It's amazing. And I have a couple of other questions. We've run several songs since we identified you as the flautist of... were you playing the flute on those other tracks that we heard subsequent to that also?
Anything that we've played that has a flute on it is me playing.
Amazing. Just amazing. And another question that has come up is you've mentioned world music influences, and we're wondering about some examples of that regarding your influence from worldwide influences.
Well, first of all, I'm Jewish, and when I was a kid, I listened to a lot of, like, Hebraic melodies, a lot of Middle Eastern-sounding stuff. And in some of the tracks that you haven't heard, that is always playing in the background of, you know, in my head, which is, I suppose, why some of that... The first record with the strings, like the minor sort of like dark, sad sort of thing, that I think that comes out of that to some degree. And so the main aspect of the world music is Eastern European in nature. However, I really love Indian music, although I'm no authority by any means on it. I've just always loved it. And the Najma track that you heard, The Optimist, is sort of indicative of my love for that. Before I start saying more than I'm actually capable of talking about, that's it in a nutshell. And if we could play one other instrumental track from the Optimist, you might hear some more of that sort of thing, just to some degree anyway.
Wonderful. Which one would that be?
Could we try The Road Back? And I hope that I'm not wrong in choosing that in terms of the influence, but it's the song I wanted to play anyway.
Yes, we have it here, and Bob has it loaded into the music machine, I'm sure. It's Stan Harrison from his CD, The Optimist, and the track is called The Road Back. amazing. And again, the room loves it. Lots of wows, and it's beautiful. And by the way, one of our listeners has a copy of Radiohead, the national anthem track, which they're currently sending it to the studio. If the studio receives it before the end of the show, I'll let you know, and we'll run it. We're very participatory around. No, not a problem.
I'm doing the same thing, actually. Actually, I'm sending this out to you. I don't know if it should be going to you or not, but one of us will be there before the end of the show, I would imagine.
I would imagine one of us will have it before it's over.
Doing that.
Wonderful.
I don't know. Yeah.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm having a little trouble hearing. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. I was just going to ask if it would be possible to let your listening audience where they can get my record and things like that. Is that possible?
Oh, of course it's possible. And in fact, I should tell you, we are posting the links to your site in the chat room. But of course, the listeners who are
great.
Not in the chat room don't know it. So please, by all means, let us have it.
Oh, okay. First of all, you can reach me if you want to contact me, and you're on MySpace. I'm at www.myspace.com/Stan Harrison, and you can buy the Optimist. You can download it at iTunes. You can buy it at Amazon.com, or you can go to cdbaby.com/Stan Harrison 2. And you could find it there. If you don't put the two, you'll be directed to the place where the Ties That Blind lives. And so those are places to get my music, and I do appreciate it. And I certainly would love it if everybody went and did it, but I don't expect that. But I'm glad I was able to tell everybody.
Well, I'm glad you were, too. Now, is all of that information at www.stanharrison.com?
Not all of that will be there, because that website has information about my first record. It hasn't been redone yet, and so it has no information about the Optimist and no information about from MySpace. But if they go to my MySpace page, they'll see information about the Optimist. And if they go to cdbaby.com/Stan Harrison 2, they'll also be able to read a bit more about me if they're interested.
Okay, what I'm going to do then is, by tomorrow morning, I will add your MySpace link to your calendar date at strictlyconfidentialradio.com. Most of our listeners know strictlyconfidentialradio.com because I say it over and over and over. So if you don't have any of the information that Stan just mentioned, by tomorrow morning, the direct link to his MySpace page will be there, and you can go and check out all of the music. Because that's I just wanted to point that out so people would know. I don't know where to go next. Everything that you pulled out of the hat has been wonderful. I know that we haven't hit the Phoebe Snow, but I don't know if it...
I'm sorry, I keep interrupting.
No, there's a slight... We're having a slight delay issue with the phone system. It's not that you're... We're awkward since the electronics are having one of their moments. You know, it happens from time to time. But I'd love to hear the Phoebe Snow track if it's okay to run that.
It's great. And then we could do an instrumental track afterward. We could talk about that. But the Phoebe Snow song is called "Would I Ever Know."
Okie doke. All right. Good. Then that's part of the Optimist CD. And Bob, that's track 7. It's Stan Harrison. "Would I Ever Know?" It's Phoebe Snow is singing. And if you would run that for us, please.
Thank you.
Another series of wows and fantastics, and they're all heartfelt. I do have a question for you. Another question has arrived. This person is interested to know about the time you spent with Bruce Springsteen, and is wondering if that was session or bandstand.
I didn't record. I did a live performance with Bruce that was on a box set. And it was quite a number of years ago. But to be honest with you, I don't remember what the song was that I did. I was once again with the Miami Horns, which were the South of Johnny Horn section. And I just can't for the life. I think we might have done it at Madison Square Garden, but I'm not sure. I should add that there was one point when I was touring with Duran Duran, and I was called to go out on tour with Bruce. And the Duran tour was ending at one point, and there was a one-month overlap between the end of that tour and the beginning of Bruce's tour. And Duran Duran's tour ended a month early, and Bruce's started a month late. And I kicked myself for that, but it's the nature of the beast. But that's the one thing that I recorded with him. I've known him for a long time, although I mean, we're not friends in that we don't hang out with each other, but I've known him for quite a long time.
Well, the person who asked the question is indicating that they own that box set and that, in fact, they stood in line to get it. They're also wondering about a Michael Breckner. Did you meet Michael? Apparently, Michael played for Bruce and passed away.
Yeah, Michael was one of my favorite saxophone players, and Michael died very, very recently, unfortunately. And I was obsessed with Michael Brecker when I was in college and after college. In fact, I used to try to influence what I was going to dream about. I had read some books about dreams at one point. They they fascinated me, and I wanted to see if I could use my dreams to help me write songs. I was trying to write songs way back when, and also at one point I tried to get a close up picture of Michael Brecker's embouchure in my dreams so that I could sort of study it while I was asleep.
Priceless.
I would transcribe the solos. I would see him at the repair shop. We'd get our horns repaired at the same place. And I've run into him over, in New York, it's hard not to run into lots of well-known musicians. And so I did know him. We knew each other, but not, once again, we weren't friends. But he was a great guy.
Yeah. Well, you know, the more we talk, the more I realize we either need to give you a show or feature you for a week. I don't know which. I do know that the national anthem track, we cannot use. It was an MP4A format, which in the studio is able to play MP3 format. So we'll have to do that another time.
Is
so
that
let's,
the one that your listener sent?
Yeah.
MP3, but it's more time than your show allows.
Yeah, we are at 10:50, so we do have to wrap it about 8 minutes for the next segment. By the way, I'll send you the contact information and all that probably in the morning with Billy Shears, because I'll no doubt be involved in the next. We're the Head On Radio Network hosts chat for an hour, so I'll probably be involved in that this evening, so I won't have time to do it right after the show.
That's fine.
And we are all dying to hear what the next song is. If it's 10:51, if we have one that runs 3 or 4 minutes, I think we could easily fit it in.
Okay, well, here's I wasn't sure what to do. Here's a song that has it's unlike the other ones to some small degree. We'll just go with it. It's called On a Never Ending Day.
Okay, fine. Yes, that's on the Optimist CD. Stan Harrison, On a Never Ending Day. And is this a lyrical song or is this a music track?
There'll be some lyrics at a certain point.
And who does
that's
the lyrics? Oh, okay. All right. Bob, if you would run that track On a Never Ending Day, please. I think that will finish the track. Stan, it's just beautiful. And by the way, the national anthem, just a track, just arrived in my mailbox as an MP3, so I'll be sure and include that in the music that I send over to Billy. I'll send him the complete collection tomorrow and put you guys in touch. I know Billy would like to have you on his show. Also, he has a website that people write a musical commentary, which you would probably be brilliant at, and post the music track. I'll send you all the information about Billy.
That would be just great.
And in addition to that, coming up next is what we call the horn section, which you may get a chuckle out of. The horn, in this case, stands for the Head-On Radio Network, and this is a part of the evening that the hosts get together and just chat for an hour until the next program comes on at midnight. It'll probably be John and myself and Bob Kincaid, and I've been asked to get your permission to run a few more of your tracks during the horn section.
Yes, that would be my pleasure to have you do that. I'd really appreciate it.
Wonderful. Well, we're gonna go ahead and we have to go ahead and wrap, and then we'll be headed into that segment next. Now this will just be the host, so we will actually lose you as a guest, but we'll go ahead and we're going to be using a few of those. And Stan, you have been remarkable. I cannot wait to tell Ernest Cole when we see him in a week what a wonderful guest you were. I hope we can have you back.
Well, I want to thank Ernest, and I want to thank you very much. I'd love to come back, and thank you very much for making this easy for me, because I don't do these things every day.
Well, I do them every day.
I felt very comfortable. So thank you very much.
I'm very pleased to hear that. And Stan, good evening to you, sir, and have a wonderful evening, and thank you again. And that, my friends, was Stan Harrison in New York City, and we will be adding his MySpace link to strictlyconfidentialradio.com so that you can access all of his music. And again, I'm sure Billy Shears will be featuring him on an upcoming show, and I'll get that information to Billy tomorrow. Please join us in just a few minutes for the horn section. I believe tonight it will be Bob Kincaid and myself and the famous John Fox from Down Under, our Australian host. And that will be followed by a live John Fox show at midnight called All Foxed Up. And so in closing, here's Cynthia Manley reminding you.
News Network. An American's right to bear arms will be reconsidered by the U.S. Supreme Court, justices agreeing to hear an appeal by the District of Columbia in favor of the city's existing handgun ban. Justices will review a ruling by a federal appeals court that struck down the D.C. law, saying that it was unconstitutional under the Second Amendment right to bear arms. It is a case that could produce the Supreme Court's first ruling in nearly 70 years on Second Amendment rights. A resolution in the fight over embryonic stem cell research could be on the horizon. Human skin cells have been transformed into batches of cells that look and act just like embryonic stem cells. Researchers agree it'll be years before their new technique called regenerative medicine will be used to treat patients. The world's top diplomats will soon receive a letter from Iran's foreign minister arguing the case for the Iranian nuclear program as peaceful and not a burgeoning atomic threat. The letter was published in Farsi by the Iranian state news agency, letter insisting that all Iran's nuclear activities are based on the UN's nuclear charter and the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty.